to hear. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
It's a great pleasure to be here. I think it's 6 years since I came to Ovaid, and I have very happy memories of it. And this is a wonderful crowd, and thank you all for coming, because it's not much fun to write poems if there's nobody to listen to them. So the first poem I'm going to read quickly is a poem I wrote recently, and I'm going to use it as a lead-in to a kind of a whistle-top tour of my new book, of this book. Mating Mallards. A conference of pairs. They arrive over the weir, ducks to water. Squabbles of single sex everywhere. It's February, a pet day. And they're assessing the air like imams the moon. They want to get a mood on. The drakes have a job to do to get their ducks in a row. Suddenly, one female is pinioned underwater in a thug's embrace, a contestable date rape. Yet they swim excitedly upstream and back again, continue what seems like the necessary imperatives of some libidinous, salacious, exploitative dance. I'm outraged for the females, but it's only water off a duck's back. It seems as they shake themselves off, and can we go back downstream? Okay, well, that poem, I suppose, is about the realities of nature. And I suppose in this book, what I try to explore are some of those realities in terms of a Greek myth. Now, before I read or talk about that, I'd like to thank Joe Horgan. He's not here, but I would like to thank him for a wonderful review of the book. So if any of you see him, tell him I said thank you, because it was very, very nice to get a review of the book, which understood what I was doing. The story of Demeter and Persephone is a key narrative in Greek mythology. And yet a lot of people don't know the story. A lot of people know a little bit maybe about Persephone. So I don't know if you remember anything about the Persephone story. Does anybody remember anything about it?
Yes, she was
carried
to the
island. Yes.
Behind
no, that, not, she didn't look behind, no, that's Eurydice.
Well, there is.
Yeah, okay, well that's good, that's impressive. Basically, yes, she's abducted into the underworld by Hades. Now, I think a lot of the common lore is that she was raped by Hades, by the god of the underworld. So I went back to look at the original text in translation in Homer, and that's not really the way the story is told at all. So that was very exciting to see that the story has become different things in different cultures. And I didn't know very much about Demeter at all. But Demeter was Persephone's mother. So when Persephone is abducted by Hades, Demeter goes on strike. And she decides that she's the goddess of the harvest and of light and so on. And she decides to go on strike. And that means that she doesn't allow any light to the earth, and that's the myth of winter. So I kind of use that in, you'll see in some of the poems. And eventually she gets Persephone back for some time of the year through negotiations with Zeus, who's the head honcho. And that's when Persephone comes back to the earth, that's the myth of spring. So Persephone is always associated with spring and renewal and so on. So I suppose I was interested in that story in terms of its reflection of the natural cycles in nature and put also the natural cycles in the lives of human beings. And the idea that, you know, that there are different stages that we all have to go through. And so I explored Demeter in terms of middle age, which was an appropriate kind of theme for me. And I also looked at how Persephone and Demeter are kind of axes within each of us. So in a sense, Persephone ends up being the mother of Demeter. Now, the first poem, so in the early part of the poem, I looked at the experience that Persephone and Hades had, and I tried to situate it as a kind of a normal love experience. So when she goes down into the, sorry, now I'm having trouble with the light here. When she goes down into Hades, she's not being violently abducted, as many of us think. She's actually kind of enjoying this. Tumble. I land in you unexpectedly, down, and something silky like new grass scattering. And it is soft, and I fit perfectly, like in memory form. And maybe it is a memory, and it is silky like a caress, your fingers stroking me, and new. I have never come here before, and green somehow like soft summer warming me, down deeper than I've ever known. And maybe you heard the whimper as I gave myself to the comfort of you, concave as a moon, but not cold or blue. And I gave myself as a child extends her little arms wide and trusting on the world. The edge between inside and outside blurred like tears blur. Eyes that still see and your arms wrap around me and I'm satisfied. I suppose the other thing I wanted to kind of explore in the myth thing was, because it hasn't really been done in that way, is to look at Hades and to kind of reconstitute him as a kind of a good, normal fella, you know, just playing the field, not being this horrible guy that was taking advantage of Persephone. So, I have a few poems about Hades. I'll read this one first, I think. Hello, Dem, or is it Perseph? Hades here. A man with hands, which hold other hands, but not as if each of them was the only one in the world. Know what I mean? Better, my dear Cerberus, that's the dog, to disclose my strange ways to the ladies, and how I walk with multiple leads, champion. Still, I will concede that I cannot multitask even with all of these hands. And if I'm honest, I want to tell you I forgot what my hand feels like until you stretched out yours to me and said, "Hello, Mr. Hades." It was blue and cold. You took it from under my glove and I felt such heat. Hell, I did. I forgot what my... Hell, I did. And I do believe it came from beneath your fingers, your cheeks aglow. I didn't know hands might search like this, for where palms feel plump and tender, measuring up against each other. Hey girl, someone should have told me this could happen before that first handshake was over. Hello. You don't have to talk after anyone. I'll survive. in looking at Persephone, I also wanted to link her to her mother in lots of ways, because she is also her mother, and she's kind of maturing and changing. And I think that as a mother, I also understand this experience of having my children kind of call me to toe in some way. Persephone to Demeter. And this is after Demeter's Prayer to Hades by Rita Dove. I don't know if any of you know Rita Dove. She's an American poet, very good poet. Mum, give us a break. What I wish for you, that you stop putting your old head on our young shoulders. You are right that no one shows faith in anything without dying, but you seem not to see that coming here has been that for me. Leave Hades alone. We still remember the sky, even if it's a hue of purple we see in each other's eyes. We mirrors do not tell lies. What I see of myself now in Hades brings new life. Mum, I will come back, and you will wear your floral dress, and we will dance with joy over the fields, knowing exactly how to look after the lives we change, responsible and amazed. But poor old Demeter's having a hard time. I'm looking into this room and I see lots of people who have not gone to middle age yet.
Yeah.
It's waiting for you guys. And so this poem is about Demeter's perspective on Persephone, and how Persephone's coming of age also brings home to her that the next stage for her is old age. And maybe she's not too cheerful about it in this one. Demeter does not remember Persephone, her shadowed daughter in the portico, peeping through the cracked wall, or what she said to keep her away, or what she gave her to dam her legs when blood flowed red into the underworld. Demeter cannot remember her first smile or teeth, the words she made. Persephone would have liked to know. Now a woman, she looks into the still lake of her dreams, filled by the purlings of the Styx. That's the meaning. What does she see? She walks away heartbroken from the quivering reflection, cries out, Demeter is not me. So if there's a going away, which there is, at this point in life between the mother and the daughter, there's also a coming back. And you remember that in the myth, Hades gives Persephone pomegranate seeds before she goes back to the earth. And that's what binds her to him. Now you can figure all that out yourself. I didn't really write about that. I think it's very interesting, but in this poem I just want to give a sense of how he wanted Persephone. She wasn't escaping from him. He wanted her to go back to her mother and make a truce with her mother. Hades said, go back to your mother, to the land she came from, up through the slit in the ground. Wipe the night from your eyes. Find the girl you left behind among the flowers, her wounds still smarting. Bring her back with you to me, but lover first. She has the secret of how our wounds explode into roses, their perfume everywhere. Now, I've written a lot of poems about Demeter in terms of the experience of middle age. And this is one which I think looks at it from the point of view of probably menopause, I would say. Soon it will be winter, and Demeter does not know what she hates most about the change. Her straw hair, her broken nails, a shriveling up inside, no blood vein. Insomnia as she tosses her tired head this way and that. She thinks of Persephone, the daughter she fed, and is jealous of those pert little breasts, those eyes, reminding her of another bed where she was desirable as a wife. She can feel her hardening arteries, her sagging eyes, stretched to crow's feet as she smiles. There is no sap inside her anymore, a grayness rising up through her thighs. Persephone is wet with smiles, her soft legs parting for Hades. Axis, of course, then, which I explored all this was through the cycles of nature and of how much I think we all draw on nature as we move through the world as human beings, and how it takes us in some way, it accompanies us through the different stages of our lives. And that's what I try to kind of capture here. So it's based on some of my early memories of my grandmother's house near Newport, County Mayo. Almanac. And there's a little epigraph from Eleni Quillenon. I am the angel who says, remember. Remember the wood sorrel under the pines. Spring, lifting the leaves into a green luminosity. Maybe that should be luminescence. Between your teeth, its liquid light. The dog rose on the ditches in May, spreading in all directions, its perfume delicate, tender, its thorns unforgiving. The nectar of fuchsia, drawn by your pursed lips, assessed like wine by the height of sun in July. The vetches, after the blue flowers turned to caviar in August. You played with their black beads, these miniature peas, and acquired taste. Black sloes, shriveled and pungent, hit the roof of your mouth, cut like the slant of October light and coming winter. You were tuned once to these rhythms, knew from when you saw frogs spawn in the drains that the seasons would tumble into your lap as gifts. You'd be sorting in a bedsit in Centre City, sifting from the chaff of the years the memories of angels. I have to check my time here, I don't want to. Okay. Okay, sorry, I'm trying to... So this poem within, the poems, as the book goes on, is what I suppose the poems are really about, are about truces, the truces we make with different parts of ourselves, and how we dialogue with the Persephone and the Demeter inside us. In a true dialogue, you give up another bit of yourself to trust some fractured truth, to say what a heart is, or a soul, my mind or yours, these labels passed their sell-by date. Nothing for once and for all. However carefully thought out, the vows were then, and now what are these words uttered so tenderly? And will you remember the campanella and the tormentum we gathered in the meadow last spring? I balance like an old ballerina, fear what comes after this long pirouette. So I started the book with a poem exploring Persephone coming of age, but Demeter also comes of age, and the coming of age is the truce. A truce with getting old, ultimately. Demeter coming of age. As I bathe alone, I wonder what would be a good outcome. This time, I let my head below the level of the water, and my hair spreads out like tumbleweed in the sea. My middle-aged body lops, and the water makes tides around my hips and breasts. My legs, with their varicose veins, the legacy of maternity, I embrace. I let it all hang out. It makes no difference now that this man or that loved this body, rested on it like summer sun on grass. Just as the grass barely notices the creatures who crawl on the earth, just as the earth itself is indifferent to movements on its surface, waits for boiling magma to rise up to its thin skin. It will take something like this to shift the tectonic plates, reunite the old continent. Now, for a little change of pace here or whatever, I'm going to read you just a few poems, recent poems. I have to see how I'm doing time-wise. I think I can't understand this at all now. Okay. These two poems, I suppose, have nothing in common. But they do develop some of the themes that I suppose I still haven't worked out of my system. Because let's face it, we're all working things out of our system as writers. You'll find that you'll be doing that for a long time if you keep up with your writing. Jesus, this man, they told us he could spend the day talking to the crowds, laying hands on the sick, spend the night in prayer on the mountain, walk great distances under hot sun. He could fall sound asleep in an open boat, tossed by the storm that his friends feared would take them under. In the face of hostility, he could answer interrogators, make them regret their wound. This avant-garde poster boy was so amenable and compassionate that everyone longed to be near him. We knew his ministers we admire them all in the eternal span of their chasubles, blessing our young lives, their fingers to the sky, the purity of our white broderie anglaise, the sharpness of our shirts and ties, all the vows we made in veils and fascinators. They forgot to tell us that Jesus never grew old, didn't even get to middle age with its crisis of identity, its confusion, its regret, its panic, its rage against time, or later to be crippled, cranky, incontinent, bedridden, unwanted, tangled in the mortal coil. Perhaps that's why Anna and Simeon stood serene and wise in the sidelines of the temple, knowing we would find out in due course how sweet words are nothing against old age, paid their respects and took leave of the little ones setting out. Jesus, cut off in youth, only half the story. And the last poem I would like to read is a poem about another theme, and that's, I suppose, one of the things you will discover as you keep writing, is that the same themes come up over and over again in your writing, and they come out for another dusting. So this poem is about bereavement, really, about childhood bereavement, and it's a memory of my sister when she was about 8 years old, and I was probably about 14, let's say, and she is playing and I'm just looking at her, interpreting her play, and the church is called the Archangels. The square in front of the Archangels. It started with hopscotch, a stone, and squares. A way to pass the time waiting for your mother. You convinced you could put everything into the neat categories they were once in. Meticulously counting with your feet every square on the cobble without trespassing a line, without tripping into the tiny interstitial dikes. You tested your balance on the diagonals, popped on every odd number, crisscrossed your legs into the most restricted spaces, keeping your nerve when you were out of breath, holding out on those fractals of fate as you made your way tippy-toe onto the smallest square you imagined in the centre. This is how you tested those inevitable consequences as dark descended on the quiet waters of the Mall. The rooks about to startle from the Angelus bells and become black angels from hell, rising victorious from the trees, distorting that square on which you landed into a dark rectangle into which your father fell while Michael, Raphael and Uriel were asleep. Okay, I couldn't really end on a poem that's sad. So I'm going to read the last poem in this book, because that was a big kind of issue for me at the end, like how this book was going to end. Was it going to end like with all the pains of dealing with middle-age angst, or was it going to look forward a bit? And in the end, I came down on the positive side. So this, you know, we're all obsessed with the weather in Ireland, and I kind of love that, you know, like, it's, there's always something to talk about in the weather. So that's the kind of trope that I used for this last poem. It's called Forecast. You turn me around and change the frame. You're sorry and winded. There's some awkward readjustment of limbs, like trees that find their branches when the wind dies down. We go back the way we came, the cloud breaking up as it comes in from the sea. Everything from this angle looks different. You take out your thermometer, barometer, wind vane. The outlook is good, you say. Cumulonimbus calvus, your favourite. A sky filled with narrative. Great big faces puffed, playfully portentous. You say they will be tipped with red and gold at sunset. Thank you very much.